p.m. right here at PRN.FM. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us. Anybody save me?
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. I hope you're having a very happy 4th of December 2012. It's like a spring day here in New York City. Whoa, it's December and it's spring. What's going on? I'm not going to say global warming, but the weather has been interesting, and I love it like this, so I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to stay outside and enjoy it while I can. The holiday of Hanukkah is coming up very soon, in a few days, and I've been celebrating Hanukkah for a long time. I always like to say that I'm not a religious person. I'm one of these agnostic-leaning atheists, something along those lines. But I'm open to everybody practicing and believing whatever they want to, as long as it's kind and compassionate. But I do love holiday food. And the big recipe that's made on Hanukkah is potato pancakes. And typically they're fried in lots of oil. And over the years, as I've been cleaning up my diet, I have not been looking forward to making or eating those things, but we do it every year. It's tradition. Well, I finally came up with a recipe that I'm so excited about. It's baked potato pancakes. We just did a food show on it to show you how easy it is. You can find it all at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And I just wanted to mention one more thing about Hanukkah. It's about something that happened in history over 2,000 years ago when the Syrians were fighting the Jews and the Egyptians and... sounds a lot like today, doesn't it, unfortunately? But one thing happened where there was this purified olive oil, and it was used in a candelabrum called a menorah. And it was supposed to last for one day, and it lasted for 8 days. And as a result, we celebrate by eating lots of food cooked in oil. And I think we got the message wrong. I don't think the message is to use lots and lots of oil or eat lots and lots of oil. I think the message is to conserve oil. Make oil last for 8 days that used to last one day. Wouldn't we be in a much better place if we had learned that message 2,000 years ago? Okay. So just remember, responsibleeatingandliving.com. And my first guest today is... Colleen Patrick Goodreau, the award-winning author of 5 books, including the best-selling The Joy of Vegan Baking, The Vegan Table, Color Me Vegan, Vegan's Daily Companion, and The 30-Day Vegan Challenge. She has guided people to becoming and staying vegan for over 12 years through sold-out cooking classes, best-selling books, inspiring lectures, engaging videos, and her immensely popular audio podcast, Vegetarian Food for Thought. Using her unique blend of passion, humor, and common sense, she empowers and inspires people to live according to their own values of compassion and wellness. She also contributes to National Public Radio and the Christian Science Monitor and has appeared on the Food Network and PBS. And welcome again to It's All About Food. Colleen, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, Karen. Thank you.
Okay, so what's going on the West Coast with you?
Oh, goodness. Well, we're also enjoying beautiful weather, but that's kind of par for the course. We're in our rainy season, which is always lovely because it just makes you get inside more and cook and bake and
that's not
cozy
what I
up.
Hear from every... I mean, it's great that you have a positive attitude about it, but I've heard a lot of people complaining about that rain out there.
I know. I love it. You know, I love the sun. I'm actually a sun worshiper. And when it's rainy season, I love the rain because it's time for it and we need it. And we live in a drought state. So frankly,
right.
I love it. And we have rain catchment tanks. So I get really excited when it rains because it means that our tanks are getting filled.
Full.
So that means we have irrigation for the summer. So I get really excited about rain.
Yeah, water is so important.
It is.
And there are lots of reasons why we have imbalances with our water supply all over it. And some of it is related to food.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so you are on a mission to make more vegans.
Well, I would actually say that I'm on a mission to point people toward their compassion. And what seems to be the best way to do that is to manifest that compassion by not consuming animals. So I really make that my mission. My message is really compassion, and veganism is a means to that compassion. It's not mm-hmm. it's not the end, and I think that's the big mistake I think that's been made over the years in advocating veganism is that the message then becomes that veganism is the end, and I think that's where people get, you know, hung up on the perfection and purity aspect of it. So just a slight correction. My mission is to really get people to be more compassionate.
Right. Well, the semantics are really interesting. And I know you studied English, right? So you're into
yeah.
semantics.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people interpret what veganism means. People have their own feeling about what compassion means. Mm. You know, what I think is compassion. Some other people that think they're being compassionate, I don't quite think they know what it means.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's why I think telling our stories is really important, because I think we all have a universal story of, you know, being compassionate children, not wanting to hurt anybody. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to, right? Like
mm-hmm.
not wanting to hurt anyone. And it's a very basic response I think we have, and we may have talked about this before, where we, you know, we use that as a barometer for mental health. If someone's kind to an animal, we see it as a good sign, and if they're not kind to an animal, we see it as a danger signal. And I think we all kind of know that instinctively, and so we get supported when we're doing kind things. We get supported when we're doing compassionate things, and we get chided, and I'm talking about when we're children, when we do things that aren't kind. So the message is be kind, you know, the golden rule, right? Don't do unto others. And so I think most of us have that as our instinct, and then, but what happens is we aren't directly involved with hurting animals that we consume, so we kind of put it in a box over here and don't really see it, so we don't really think we're doing anything wrong. And if you were to ask anybody who consumes animals, myself included, when I ate animals, if you asked me if I was a compassionate person, I would have said, absolutely, I'm a compassionate person. Of course I'm a compassionate person. I don't hurt anybody. I don't do anything harmful. And yet, indirectly, with our dollars, we are causing harm. And that's what's so beautiful about this path to that full compassion, returning back to that full compassion, is actually manifesting that compassion by not participating in these violent industries. That, to me, is kind of coming back into our true compassion, because I don't believe that I was not a compassionate person,
mm-hmm.
and I don't believe that people who are consuming animals are evil people. I just believe that we're not in our full compassion, and that's, I think, where we really, really want to be.
You know, you talked about telling stories, and one just popped into mind. I'm not sure exactly where I'm going to go with this, but you're talking about when we were young and things that happened, and I want to think I was a compassionate kid, but I remember playing with a girlfriend of mine, and we used to like to grab beetles and dissect them, and we would get the alcohol out, and we would pretend to be scientists. And I was curious. I was fascinated by watching bugs, and I just want to put it out there. I'm very sorry that I did that to those bugs. I didn't know what I was doing.
I know. Well, it's true, and I think a lot of people have stories like that, and I think there's also this element of if they don't look like us, they don't feel the way we do. And I think a lot of children who do things, especially to insects and amphibians, we can't see facial expressions that resemble ours, so I think we don't know that they're suffering.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about the cruelty of cats when they play with their prey. I don't think they know their prey is suffering. If they knew their prey was suffering and they did it anyway, that's a different story. But I don't think they know and thus are deriving some sadistic pleasure from it. So I don't know that you as a child realized, and maybe I'm just making an excuse for you, but I don't know that you realized it. I think
I
the
didn't.
Real test is when we know it and we do it anyway. And I think that's not as common as those who just don't do it at all.
I didn't. I was maybe 7 or 8, and then when I was maybe 11 or 12, I remember at a 6th grade science fair there was one guy who had put a frog under ether or something like that, and he had attached a string to the frog's heart and tied the string up over something so you could see this thing moving, and it was really from the heart pumping, and I was horrified by that.
Yeah.
I related more to the frog than the beetle.
Yeah.
We look
sure.
more mm-hmm. like frogs.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that's a big question about empathy and who we identify with.
And maybe it was a prince, that little frog. Who knows?
Maybe it was a prince.
Anyway. Okay. So, 30 days. Why 30 days? 30-day vegan challenge. Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, the principle behind it is that most people say they don't eat a lot of meat, dairy, and eggs. I don't meet anybody who says otherwise. There's nobody I meet who, when I say I'm vegan, doesn't say, "Oh, I don't eat a lot of mm-hmm. meat," or "I don't eat a lot of dairy."
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, you really don't know how much you're eating until you stop. So that's really the theory behind the 30-day vegan challenge: is stop long enough to recognize your patterns and recognize your habits and replace them with new ones, and let me help you on the way. So 30 days. You know, it's a nice round time period. They say that, we change a habit in 3 weeks. I like 30 days. I think it gives you enough time to really replace behavioral patterns, and your palate starts to clean out, and your body starts to clean out, and you can see differences in your blood work as well. So that's the principle behind 30 days.
I definitely believe in the all or nothing routine. I'm a very digital person, on, off, yes, no. White, black, 1-0, however you look at it. And I think that when we get kind of analog and we get hazy about things, it's harder to make change. It's definitely harder.
Yeah, and you don't recognize the patterns as much. You don't see the patterns as much. Because even if you say, "Oh, I've cut down," or "I'm in moderation," moderate compared to what? You know, you don't really see what you're grabbing for until you decide you're not going to grab for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see your behavior. You go to grab for it and you say, "Whoa, oh wait, hold on. I'm not doing that right now. So what are my choices over here?" You don't do that as much if you're just saying, I'm just cutting back. So I think that really works. And frankly, that's what the studies show. That's what the research shows, is that people who do something full on are much more successful than if they do it just a little bit.
A lot of people talk to me about when they're in a health crisis, because I've been through a health crisis and I got out of it, and I like talking to people and helping them through. But very often I give them this thing where you really need to do it all the way, and they backtrack and say, "Well, what if I just did, if I incorporated some of these foods and I didn't totally give up others?" How do you respond when people say that?
I don't know that I don't know. I think. I mean,
well,
people will.
I think it's what we were just talking about, that it's easier to break habits when you go all the way.
I mean, I think what encourages people to keep going is when they experience the benefits themselves. And that doesn't just have to be physical, tangible benefits, and they are there. I mean, that's why I recommend, before people do the 30-day vegan challenge, go get your blood work done, take a look at your numbers, see what your numbers say, so that by the end of the 30 days, when you go back and get your blood work done again, you actually see the difference. And that's really empowering for people. So that is one aspect of it. But you also feel benefits, things that you can't put your finger on, things that you can't measure. The spiritual benefits, the mental benefits, the emotional benefits, and even the other physical benefits that aren't as measurable, just the way, you know, you feel a little more regular and you feel a little more energetic and, you know, those kinds of things. So I do think that my message to someone who said that would be, just do it long enough to experience the benefits yourself. And when you experience them, like anything, you just want more of it.
Yeah.
That's what's so exciting about it.
You never know how good you can feel until you do it. Gosh, I wish I could share that good feeling with people so that it would be easier for them to just accept.
Yeah. Well, you're doing, I mean, I think in sharing our own good feelings, and I mean, I really do believe in the power of example, and I believe in the power of passion, is, you know, as we live our lives and we live our values, and manifest our values and do it with purpose and clarity and passion, I think that's really contagious. And I think people get excited and want some of that too.
Now, this 30-day vegan challenge, it's a membership that people sign up for?
No, it's just a one-time fee. It's literally $20.
Uh-huh.
And once they sign up, they get a welcome email, and the welcome email gives them a login password and a link to a portal. And then they have all of the information. When they start the 30-day vegan challenge, they get the information in a drip format on that portal. So they get day one and day one's materials. It might be a video. It might be an audio message. It might be a recipe on day one. On day two, they have access to day two's materials. It might be a video. It might be an audio. It might be a recipe, and so on and so on and so on. So by the end of the 30 days, you've built up this reserve of information that you have access to for the rest of your life. So that's basically how it works, kind of giving people the information in drips until they have it all.
And then after 30 days, can they still access the portal?
That's what I mean. They have it forever. Absolutely. Oh. So they can go back to that. And that's lovely because, you know, the benefit of it being an online program is that I will continue to produce more material. In fact,
mm-hmm.
I just launched a new video yesterday on compassionate gift giving around Thanksgiving. I had a video launch around Thanksgiving, creating a Thanksgiving meal. So material will grow as time goes on and people can continue to have access to it.
And if they want to sneak ahead and get ahead of day two or three, can they do that?
They can't. It really does give you the information because I want people to digest each day's information. There's a lot to digest, and I know people might have questions that might be in day 13 and they may not be there yet, but if they're just committed to the 30 days, I promise I'll get to that information. What they can have access to right away is the community boards. So there are other people taking the 30, obviously there are lots of people taking the 30-day vegan challenge, and they can communicate with them in the discussion boards at, you know, as soon as day one. So they do have access to support and answers to their questions.
Right. I just know some people like to read the ending to books.
I know. I know. But I think it's fun this way. I think it also creates anticipation and kind of excitement about what the next day's content.
And when they sign up, it's a form of commitment, a kick in the butt to do something, at least for 30 days.
Yeah, and, you know, there's the gift certificates as well. So I think it's a wonderful gift to give to friends and family who've expressed curiosity or interest. You can give a gift to your friend, and, you know, you can even say, you know, a lot of people say, how do I get my friends, how do I get my family to do this? And I'm not someone who believes in forcing the issue. I believe in advocating for it and certainly encouraging them and giving them information. But it is a lovely thing to say, look, for Christmas, for the holidays, I would love you to do the 30-day vegan challenge. So, you know, that would be a wonderful gift back to me. It's a gift to you. It's a gift to the animals. So it's one of these gifts that, you know, that keeps giving. So you can even give it as a gift and encourage someone to do it as a gift for you.
And what are some of the people saying that have been through it?
Well, I mean, that's what's so exciting for me is that the content is really solid, and it's content that I've been, you know, using in one format or another for years and years, and I know it really gives people what they need, and so people are loving it. You know, it covers everything. It covers the nutrients. Everybody asks about protein, and everybody asks about calcium and iron, and they should. But so my information is meant to not only empower them with the right information, but also dispel the myths that perpetuate around these single nutrients so that people can feel confident and not feel like they're missing out on anything. Of course, they're not. As we've talked about, the plants are where the nutrients are. The nutrients we need are plant-based. So, you know, covers all of that. It covers the social aspects, which I think is a huge part of this change for people. You know, what to do around family and how to have this conversation and what to do when people have a defensive, kind of passive-aggressive response to your being vegan. What to do when you eat out, what to do when you travel, what about children's birthday parties, what about cooking for people on the road if you're, you know, in construction and, you know, it's easier for you to just go to a fast food restaurant. So it covers all the social aspects, the travel, the practical aspects of making the time to cook and going to the grocery store and, you know, all of the things involved in the food itself. And then there's, of course, recipes. So it covers everything. And all I know is that people are really responding to it really positively, and I'm thrilled.
Yeah, well, that's great. We need more people doing this, at least moving towards healthier plant foods. It will make such a positive difference individually and for the planet. And as more people do it, it will become easier for even more people to do it.
Indeed. And, you know, certainly my work is meant to empower people so that it becomes a ripple effect, so that it doesn't just end there. And that's what's exciting, is that there's even a discussion board on advocacy. So, you know, there's so much information on the 30-Day Vegan Challenge and in my podcast on then advocating in a positive way and an effective way for this way of life, so that we can just inspire more people to do it.
Now, do people get to ask questions outside of the community? Can they ask you a question while they're on this program if they have questions?
Yeah, I mean, people do. I have people who help me and answer those questions with me, and I certainly get emails from people, and I'm not able to respond to everyone individually, obviously, but I do have support. So anybody who needs anything, I mean, we don't let any email go unanswered, and there's no question, even in the 30-Day Vegan Challenge and the community boards, that go unanswered. I check them, and I see every email that comes in, but I do have support in answering them.
Well, that's good, because people always have questions. Even if you think you've covered it all, there's always something.
It's true, but I have to say, I tend to have to always point out
That it's here somewhere.
That it's there. Yeah, so it's often like, just hang on, it's going to be there, it's in day 13, or hang on, or I have a podcast on that. Certainly there's so much more to cover, and I'm not going anywhere, but I do think I've covered a lot, because a lot of the questions are pretty much the same. You know, a lot of the same. We're social creatures, and we all have the same kind of dilemmas, and I think I've covered a lot. So often we're pointing people to the resources that already exist.
Now, I imagine a lot of this information was what you put together in your book that came out last year.
Yes.
And so then there's a lot more.
It's a lot more, and it's in different mediums, and I think that's what's fun, too, is that some people really do well with books, some people really do well with reading, some people do well with the videos, and like I said, there's lots of videos, and there's audio podcasts as well, so it's multimedia. That's what's exciting about it.
Now, how long have you been vegan?
13 years.
13 years. And has your diet changed over those 13 years?
Sure. Oh, God, yeah. I'm certain I don't eat today the way I did when I first became vegan.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And, you know, I continue to seek out foods that are just in their whole state as much as possible. Doesn't mean I don't indulge. Absolutely, I do. But I really eat very simply, and I really appreciate, you know, foods in their whole state, in their most simple state. So people expect me to be some kind of, you know, gourmand every time I'm making dinner every night, and I'm certainly not. I mean, I really love a simple soup or a simple salad, and that makes me really happy, and that's different than how I grew up, and it's different than how I ate when I first became vegan.
Yeah, I feel like there's this movement within the movement of what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat, as where I like to think that we're evolving, not just people eating plant foods, but all of us on this planet.
I think so, yeah. There's always more to learn, and there's always more to gain. And that's the hope that I give to people who are intimidated, or, you know, didn't grow up eating whole vegetables and don't think they're going to like whole vegetables. I mean, in terms of evolution, just individually, our palates change, you know? I mean, when we get the fat and salt out of our palates, our palates completely change, and we start craving things we never thought we'd crave before.
Mm-hmm.
And we stop craving things we never thought we would stop craving. And that is a definite 100% guarantee bit of hope that I can give to people, is that your palate will change.
Just to show how nutty I am, I've been sprouting broccoli sprouts, and I finally figured out how to do it so that they're gorgeous. It hasn't worked for a while, but now I've got it nailed down. And
nice.
I just, like, munch on them like nothing. I just grab a bunch of broccoli sprouts and eat them.
That's
I just
great.
Love them. But I want to get back to what we were talking about at the beginning, that this vegan thing, it's not an end. It's not an end destination. It just happens to be a name that describes some things. But we're all moving forward. We're all on a different path. And we all want to get to a better place for ourselves, for the planet. And even this vegan diet keeps evolving in many different ways. People eat differently, healthy or not so healthy, raw or macro or starchy or green, and it's all evolving.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so for me, I mean, I think the word vegan, you know, which was coined by Donald Watson in 1944, is a beautiful word that really encapsulates and gives a name to living compassionately. I mean, that's really, it's a beautiful definition. I mean, it's such a simple definition that Donald Watson gave, which is pretty much what I said before, which is, you know, doing everything we can in terms of what's possible to not create harm, to not hurt anyone. And, you know, I think we're all compelled to that. This just happens to give a name to it, and this happens to be the means to get there. And so, you know, I didn't come to veganism through diet. You know, I know there are different ways of eating within it, and yet veganism has never meant that to me. It's never meant a way of eating or a diet. It's meant the physical manifestation of this value that we have that compels us to want to live as compassionately as possible. So to me, that's just perfect and beautiful. And then within that, certainly there are different, of course there are. I mean, that's why there's not one, you know, someone said to me once, I was doing a talk and they said something like, you look so normal. Like, you just look so, do you do that on purpose? Like, is this, you know, cause a lot of people think vegans are this or that. And you just look such a normal vegan. And did you do that? And I said, this is what vegan looks like, and that's what vegan looks like, and you're what vegan looks like, and you're what vegan looks like. Many variations of what it means to be vegan as there are people on this planet. So whatever path you take in terms of how you eat or how you live, that's just, you know, we're just varied people. But vegan is many things, or vegans are, you know, we are many different kinds of people, but what we're all compelled to do is live compassionately. And that's what I love about it, is there's so much variety and potential in the movement.
People do like to hold on to those stereotypes, and I like to think with the internet and with more celebrities doing the vegan thing, it's certainly upping the image that vegans have. But we just have a few more minutes. And I want to talk more about this word vegan. I use it. I like it. But some folks say that they don't want to call themselves vegan. They don't want to draw them attention to that word. And then there are some that have been vegan, but they started to eat a little fish now. And I don't know. What are your feelings on all of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, like I said, it's a word. It gives voice to this desire to live compassionately, and I think it's great that we have a word for it. That doesn't mean we have to label ourselves. I mean, we tend to want to, though. I mean, I think we humans tend to want to label things.
And
so
identify.
I think it's a very human trait. And identify. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great thing. It's like the people who say, you know, I'm vegan. Well, I eat chickens and fish and I eat, you know, dairy sometimes, but I'm vegan. And I think, well, that's interesting. You recognize that identifying as a vegan is a positive thing, and yet you're not fully living by that definition. But yet you want to identify as a vegan. So mm-hmm. I find that interesting. Now, am I going to check them off and say, well, you're not really vegan, and so what, you can't stand in that place, and you can't stand over here. No, that's not my job. But what I do think is important is that we recognize that vegan means something, that it does mean something. You know, when someone says they're kosher, that
right.
means something,
mm-hmm.
right? That has a definition, and people live according to that, and other people recognize what that means. And I do think that we want to be consistent so that the world understands what it means when we say this is vegan. And like I said, it's more than just the food, because it is a way of living that doesn't want to hurt anybody. And that includes, you know, the things that we wear, and it includes the products that we buy, et cetera. And it includes the people that we consider as well. It's about doing the least amount of harm possible. So I'm less concerned with the labeling and the rigidity of that, but I do think that it's a word to be proud of. And
mm-hmm.
I'm very proud of my work in that I've helped give voice to that. And I've seen many people come out of the quote unquote vegan closet who had been embarrassed before because there was shame around the word. And so I think we need to take the word back and be proud of it because it means something really special.
It's funny you mentioned kosher, and certainly it's good to make parallels, because that's a diet and it has specific rules, and people have a certain degree of respect over it. There are labels on our food to designate
right.
where food is kosher, and there are costly certifications to get that label. But there are different shades of kosher where mm. people kind of loosen up on the rules, just like with being vegan, where some people will eat kosher in the home, but they won't eat in, you know, if they're eating in a restaurant, they'll kind of let things slide. Or, you know, different people are more strict about their kosherness. And it's just amusing to me because people basically do what they want to do and follow their own rules. And any word really is open to interpretation.
Well, it's true, but I will say that that's where we diverge then. It has some consistencies and it has some differences.
Mm-hmm.
Because vegan does mean something specific, and it does mean, you know, you say strict, and there's this idea of strict kosher versus non-strict kosher, and there's been that same language around veganism. I don't see it being strict. I see it as being consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone says, are you a strict vegan? Do you sneak, you know,
right.
Do you sneak animal products? Well, am I a strict vegan? If your question is, am I a consistent vegan in that there's never a time where I want to hurt someone.
Yeah.
There's never a time when I want to contribute to violence. So no, I'm pretty much consistently compassionate. Then if that's your definition of strict, then okay, I'm strict, but I just see it as consistent. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because it is about not wanting to contribute to violence kind of ever.
Right.
That's the difference, I think, between vegan as a diet, you know, and I've seen this distinction now between plant-based and vegan, and I think that is the difference. I think people who call themselves plant-based are doing it strictly from a health perspective, and that's fine, but I think that's the difference between vegan as a philosophy of living and plant-based as a diet.
Absolutely. I love it. Vegan, lifestyle, consistent. Maybe that's a consistent vegans. There should be something around that.
Consistently compassionate.
Consistently. There we go. Okay, we can come up with more slogans, but for now we're going to take a break. Colleen, thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. Where can people find you?
CompassionateCook.com.
CompassionateCook.com. Thank you for joining me again, and all
Thank
the best.
Karen.
Bye-bye. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And we will be right back with Freya Dinshaw. Hello, we're back. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food on the 4th of December, 2012. And let's move to the next part of this program. I'm going to be talking to my next guest, Freya Dinshaw, who is the co-author of the new book, Apples, Bean Dip and Carrot Cake, ABC, Kids, Teach Yourself to Cook. Freya provided the concept, supplied the majority of the recipes, guided the project, and asked her daughter Anne to be co-author. She then invited 26 children to be chefs, developed kid-friendly language, photographed their efforts, and shared the tasting tasks. For several years, Freya has volunteered at the Newfield Terrace Community Action Organization after-school program. Freya is currently serving as nutrition educator and teaches basic cooking skills to children ages 6 to 18. She has been a key organizer for local and national events to encourage compassionate, healthful living. Freya has taught cooking classes to people of all ages for over 40 years. She resides in southern New Jersey, where she works full-time as president of the American Vegan Society and editor of American Vegan Magazine. Welcome to It's All About Food, Freya.
Hello, Karen. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Well, I'm pleased to be here.
You are... Well, you're just one of the leaders in this vegan world. You've been doing it for so very long with the American Vegan Society.
Oh, that's right. We've been around for over 50 years now,
yeah.
And I've been vegan that long.
It's pretty amazing. You were there, you and your husband, Jay, when people started thinking about it, discovering it, and... You were a place to go to for information and answers. And, you know, before the internet, before Amazon.com, American Vegan Society was the place where you could find any and all books on the subject.
That's right. We have an amazing collection of books.
Yep. So thank you for that. I don't know if you have any idea of how many people you have touched with your consistency. We were just talking about consistent veganism, but your mm-hmm. consistency to this philosophy. And another thing that I've been so impressed with, you have tabled at so many events, big and small, and you're just, I don't know how many you've done recently, but when I was in my tabling phase or attending different events, you were always there at all of them with all of the books and just always a smile and upbeat energy sharing that beautiful message.
Well, we attended some wonderful events in New York that I think you were responsible for.
Yeah, I had a few of those. Yeah.
And there are so many more events to go to these days. We were recently in Albany, New York, and Boston for vegetarian food festivals.
Yeah, there are many more, which is wonderful. And thanks to the internet, more people can find them and find out about them. The advertising is a lot easier now, less costly to get the word out. So this is exciting because this message is definitely getting out and we're having this opportunity to snowball. But maybe you could tell me, because it's fascinating to me how you've been vegan so long, how did you come to that decision?
My personal journey as a
vegan. And the information, where was it? How did you figure it out?
Well, I had always been vegetarian because that was a decision that my parents made.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was a teenager, I had a pen friend in America. I grew up in England. And that was Jay, who was to become my husband. But he had become vegan a year or so before, and he explained to me the reasons why. And his information had come from the Vegan Society in England. And it was the realization that the calf is taken from the cow so that we can have milk. That was the deciding factor.
Hmm. That kind of brings me back to the law of kosher, where you're not supposed to consume dairy and meat at the same time because you're taking the milk that belongs mm-hmm. to the cow. But I think kosher didn't quite figure it out. We weren't supposed to eat either of them, not mix them together.
So many people are under the illusion that the cow gives milk, but that's not the case, especially when you've got any kind of economic venture.
No, it's pretty ugly and awful what we do today to cows in order to make milk.
Mm-hmm. Back when I became a vegan, there weren't soy milks and such readily available in the market. So we used to make our own, which didn't taste that good. Just a plain soy milk.
Yeah.
But we also made almond milks, which tasted better.
Mm-hmm.
And we developed a pretty good number of recipes and things that we did enjoy. And I put them together in a book called The Vegan Kitchen, which was first edition was 1965.
Wow.
As far as I know, it was the first cookbook in America that used the word vegan in the title.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'd like to see that book. Do you still have that in your library for sale?
Yes, we do. And, you know, I go back to it, and the standards are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. That's great. 1965. Oof,
yeah.
Boy.
Because it doesn't use... processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
It's just basic foods that we're realizing are so much better for us.
Well, a lot of us are kind of coming around to that where we embraced all of the processed foods that looked like animal foods that were actually mm-hmm. vegan, and now we're learning they're not so good for us, and we're getting back to a whole unprocessed foods, which we're meant to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you remember this. It was around 1997, 1998, something like that. But I was, I had been vegan for about 10 years, but I had been living in France. So I had gotten back to the United States, and I was getting into the activism scene. And some friends of mine invited me to go up to Cornell, that there was going to be this meeting. And you and Jay were there, and T. Colin Campbell was there. And I had so many different feelings. It was just a classroom, and there weren't many people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I was sitting with the three of you who were superstars in my mind. And not much happened at that meeting. I'm not exactly sure.
I think we had reports. Everyone reported what they and their organization were doing.
Mm-hmm.
The meeting had been convened by George Eismond. Of Veggie Dying.
Right.
He's a registered dietitian.
I know who he is now. Maybe he was there. I don't remember that. But another leader in this movement. Yeah.
that was revealing to all of us to know that there were other people working, you know, for similar purposes, and to find out what they were doing and why and how.
It was just amazing to me to be there and listen, because I learned an awful lot.
Yes.
Okay. So now you've come out with this great book, Apples, Bean Dip, and Carrot Cake. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it, and I love it. It almost looks... It's definitely appealing to children. It's in big print. It's like a picture storybook. And what?
Yes, it's a picture book, and the recipes are simple and straightforward, things that children can manage. We've arranged it in different levels so that they can work through the book, picking up different skills as they go. And our experience with working with children, we find that they really love doing it, and they're very proud of the results when they've made something.
Yeah, I think it's genius because so many kids today, well, so many adults today don't know how to cook or prepare foods. So it might the parents might be learning something too.
Yes, that's the problem. The adults don't know how to cook these days, so we've got to teach them both.
But when kids get involved with healthy food and learn how to make it themselves, they want to eat it more, which is so important.
Yes.
I was talking to one young person. In fact, maybe I need to give her this book or give her mother this book. We were talking about food, and her mother said she didn't like to eat vegetables, and so I was having a nice conversation with her at a restaurant talking about my favorite vegetables, and she seemed somewhat interested, and I said, you need to get in the kitchen and cook with your mom. And she said, my mom doesn't want me in the kitchen. She doesn't want me helping. And why do parents do that?
Well, that's very typical because parents think that they can get the meal made quicker if they're working in the kitchen on their own and don't have little people underfoot. But it's worth it to find time to work with your kid because in the long run, they'll be very helpful to you. It'll take patience and time at first, but the results will be well worth it.
Well, you know, in the old days, people used to like to hang around in the kitchen as people prepared food. And it was a great activity that people could get around and bond and help. And we need to be doing more of that, and we certainly need to be doing it with children. And I think it's a great way to spend time with kids. Turn off the TV, take the time, and there's a lot that kids can learn while they're preparing food. There's math, measuring.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
All kinds of wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who are the kids, the 26 children that are in this book?
They are the children of friends of ours or relatives, and they're children from the community center after-school program.
And how many of them eat like you do?
I don't think any of them... Well, one child is vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
There is one vegan in there because we sneaked my daughter's son in. But apart from that, these are typical Americans who are used to eating their hot dogs, grilled cheese sandwiches, and, you know, little cake things.
Okay, so they thought that this, did they think that this was going to be a fun thing to do when they got involved?
Well, they did. I'll tell you how it started out. For Santa Molino, her dietitian, visited me, and I usually arrange for her to talk somewhere. And I asked if she would consider talking to a group of children who know nothing about vegetarianism, health, and whatnot, and aren't interested. She said she would. She gave a brilliant talk to them, talking about the parts of plants that we eat. So we talked about roots and leaves and stalks and flowers, and she got the kids to name different vegetables and fruits and, you know, what part of the plant they are. And they really got into this and got quite excited about it. And then we had a hummus dip and raw vegetables and crackers and things for them to eat, and they enjoyed them. And I think we also had peanuts, and we had some fresh figs and persimmons, because it was that time of year, wild persimmons, and they enjoyed the whole meal. Then the next week, the lady who usually does the snacks said to me, I'm wondering how we can give the children something better to eat. And I said, well, how about we make a vegetable stew? We can ask the children what vegetables they like, and we'll put them together in a stew. She thought that was a good idea. So we gathered the children before they went home and said, next week we're going to make stew, vegetable stew. Tell me some vegetables you like. So they started calling out vegetables, carrots, onions, peas, broccoli. Mm-hmm. And one child said chicken, and another child said, that's not a vegetable.
Oh, the feathered vegetable, yeah.
So next week I brought all the vegetables, and the children took turns washing and cutting their vegetable. And we put it in the soup pot, and we made a wonderful soup, and we served it with triangles of pita bread with peanut butter on it, or something like that. And they're stirring the soup and identifying the vegetables, eating it and enjoying it. Then their parents came to pick it up. They couldn't believe their children were eating vegetables. And we made a really big pot of soup, so the parents sat down and ate vegetable soup, too. Mm. And then it just went on from there.
Now, do you think if the parents made that soup at home, the kids would have eaten it so readily?
You know, there is an advantage to doing something with someone else's parent mm-hmm. or another adult.
Yeah, there's that natural contrary thing that kids do with their parents.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So it's good that they can have an opportunity like this. You know, I'm thinking about when I was in school in the old days.
Yes.
We used to have home ec in junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that anymore. And there should be training for children in the kitchen what to
do.
Well,
that's right, because there are adults who are dangerous in the kitchen.
Yeah, adults don't know.
Because they haven't learned basic skills. They will turn on a pot of something to boil and leave it on high and walk out of the room. Well, what happens?
Oh, gosh, I still do that. But it's because I've got too many things on my mind. Yeah, but
so we believe in teaching these things to the children. Oh, we even have them using knives, but we teach them how to use knives properly.
Mm-hmm.
And we start the little kids out with something very simple. They can use a plastic knife and cut a banana, which is soft.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can move on to the harder vegetables and things and cut them safely with a proper knife.
Okay.
And our cutting techniques you know, are a little different from how an adult might do it, because you know, we want the child always to be using a cutting board and cutting away from them and not having any chance of hurting themselves.
Shouldn't we all cut that way?
Yeah, we should, yes. But you know how it is. You can chop up vegetables kind of against your thumb and drop it into the pot.
Yeah, ouch. Right. Now, did the kids, all 26 kids, did they all make all of the same things together?
No, they haven't all. Well, I mean, some of them have gone through the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
But for the production of the book, the kids made one, two, or three recipes.
Right.
And the photos were taken doing it.
And afterwards, do you think they liked eating vegetables more?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Did you tell them that you didn't?
I mean, we've got feedback from them and their parents say they're eating the vegetables better, they're being helpful. Now, the little boy on the cover, when his mother's making a salad, he says, can I help? I know how to do it.
Aww.
So she's thrilled about it. And
mm-hmm.
she was a parent who was, you know, reluctant to let her kid work with Anne to do this. She said, oh, he won't be any good. Well, you can work with him if you want to. But she didn't think it was going to work out. And it worked out beautifully.
Mm. I like that.
So another thing about the recipes, they're all small recipes.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can be done in a limited amount of time. You don't want to stretch a child's patience.
Right.
So, you know, there's
well, that's the same with most adults. They don't want to be in the kitchen for very long either.
Yes. Well, you know, it's enough food for one or two people. Sometimes more. We do have a few family-size recipes in there.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the one who wanted to add the chicken to the stew? Did that child or any of the other children learn about vegetarian diets during this period? Was there that discussion about eating animals or not?
Not particularly. The tack has been that they need to be eating more fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes and so on. So we teach them about them. But by and large, you know, they're living in their own families, and it would be a little difficult to put them in the position of not wanting to eat what the family food is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. Okay, well, any good little stories that came out of some of the kids the things that they were surprised or enjoyed that they liked doing?
Well, some of the children are, you know, very fond of doing this. And one of the activities we do with the local vegetarian society is we participate in Community Day, at which they let nonprofit organizations sell food as a fundraiser. So we've had a booth selling veggie burgers and salad pockets and other things. I had a couple of boys, you know, somewhat older boys, volunteer to help. So we set up the grill and so on. And who's going to cook the veggie burgers? Oh, I know all about burgers. I'll do it. Well, you know, here we come across the difference between a meat burger and a veggie burger.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're cooking a meat burger, the juices come out of it.
Yeah.
And so when they're cooking a meat burger, they tend to pat the burger down so that the juices come out more. Well, you know, I turned around to, you know, this expert, I could see he was 18 by now, and we had all these crumbs on the grill because he, you know, just smashed our veggie burgers down to crumbs. So we had to, you know, tell them that veggie burgers don't need that and they don't need to be cooked so long and and so on.
I'm looking at the bean corn pizza in your book. Level 3, that must be a fun thing that kids like making because kids love pizza.
And they can be so creative with those recipes. There are many different toppings that they can put on them.
Yeah, when you let them choose to put on what they like, I think you have a lot more success.
You do, yes.
Okay, you've been vegan for 50 years, you said, about?
Yes, somewhat over 50 years.
Has anything changed since you got started? You've seen a lot of things come and go in the vegan world.
Well, people know what vegan is now. I mean, the general public has become aware of the word vegan and what it means. And attitudes have changed. They used to be very negative towards vegans and think that it was really a nutritional deprivation to just try to be on a vegan diet. And now so many people are becoming vegan, especially young people.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting so much information and seeing YouTube videos, what happens in the slaughterhouse and so on the web, that people are becoming much more interested in it, even if they haven't taken that step yet. And we see this when we're out tabling, because they will say, oh, vegan, are you? My nephew's vegan.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit concerned about him. Where's he going to get his protein?
Oh, gosh.
So we have a little talk, and, you know, I show information we have. And they've become reassured that their nephew's going to be all right. And they'll share some of that information with him. And, yes, it's definitely better. And they're still socially a little more difficult for people.
Sure.
So we're still a minority. I mean,
yes.
What are we? We're not more than 2.5%
right.
of the population, and that's definitely a minority.
But we're gonna grow fast now that the internet is out there and people are really learning. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to snowball. That's what I've been saying a lot.
Well, there are so many people who would like to choose some good vegan food options when they're available. So they're not going to make the commitment to go all vegan right now, but they're trying it out.
Now, what's going on with the American Vegan Society these days? What kind of events do you have, and what can people discover if they get to know you?
Well, one of the events that we have, we do this 4 times a year, and this proves the point that it has been making. We have a gourmet dinner at the Academy of Culinary Arts, which is located just outside Atlantic City.
Mm.
And I came upon the opportunity to do this just by chance. And I wondered if I could get the minimum 20 people together on a Tuesday night after work. You know, not really in a big city, just kind of in between Philadelphia and Atlantic City. And surprisingly, we sold out and had a waiting list. So that meant 65 people
came and
enjoyed a gourmet vegan dinner, which was prepared by the students at the Academy of Culinary Arts. It made them realize that there is a demand for vegan food. And they learned how to make it and did a wonderful job. They get graded on how well they cook and serve the food. And so it's they like the experience, and we love it because we're treated royally.
Right. I love it. Okay.
And it's giving more importance to that in their curriculum, because most of the culinary curriculum is around meat and using cream of some sort or another to make things good.
Food service and chefs and culinary professionals need to learn how to make good vegan food, and that's happening more and more all over, which is terrific. Freya, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. Your website is AmericanVegan.org.
Yes.
And all best of luck with you with apples, bean dip, and carrot cake.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. And you're listening to It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. Visit responsibleeatingandliving.com. We've got lots of wonderful recipes there. And don't forget that potato pancake food show. Have a delicious week.